Wait a minute, wait a turn on the radio. My homie got a new show and it's time to play it though. I hope you got in tune. He talking bigger business. He make a lot of moves. He talking Scott Catoon. I'm saying wait a minute.
Welcome to TechNoir Live. I'm your host Scott Catoon and this is WGN Radio, where Chicago's top tech founders and entrepreneurs come to share their story. Sitting next to me, Brian Bannon. You are the commissioner and CEO of Chicago Public Libraries. You are also a past Chicago Innovation Award winner. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So a little background on you. Henry Crown Fellow at the Aspen Institute, appointed by Mayor Rahm Emanuel in 2012. You have been put in place to turn around I don't want to say bad history, it's just sort of a changing time history of a massive 140-year-old institution, and there's been a lot of change both in how people behave as well as what libraries and things do. So I want to kind of bring you in here and learn several things. I want an update on Chicago Public Library. I want an update on how you see people using the library from today versus yesterday. And then what you see, I'm hoping you're going to shed some inspiration in my mind that we're going to see more use of libraries than in my mind right now. I think we're not using, but maybe you're going to tell me something different. Where you see the future going in this space. So
yeah.
Right off the bat, I mean, from the beginning to now, since taking over, what have you seen? What's it like?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's important to, as we look to the future, understand a little bit of our history in public libraries. Benjamin Franklin, actually about 250 years ago, had a radical idea, one of which is lesser known, and that's really to create public spaces where people could exchange ideas, and through serendipity, those ideas would collide and real innovation would happen. That was the idea of a public library.
The first incubator.
And what's even more interesting about that first idea is that the prototype he created, or the first library he created, certainly had books, as we think of libraries today, but right in the center is where he did some of his most famous experiments with electricity and science and technology. It was literally a living laboratory, really a living innovation lab. And at some point along that history, we lost track of really what was core to our mission, which is...
I think I know what it was.
Which is...
I don't want to interrupt you.
Yeah.
I got to say it. I think I know what it was.
What?
It was the minute that they had these like quiet librarians with those little index cards. When you have to learn how to find a book amongst 10,000,
yeah,
you lose the zest for life.
Well, you know, I think definitely the business that we got into of distributing information through the printed word is certainly something we still do today, an important part of our mission.
Sure.
But the core part of our mission really was connecting people to information and ideas that will make our environment, our community stronger and more competitive. And this is really the early writings of public libraries, really about making a stronger, more competitive community and ultimately a globally competitive nation. And so it's in that context that we think about our public libraries in Chicago today. And particularly if we look at the network of now 80 libraries that we have across the city, using the mind of sort of Franklin's idea of creating centers for innovation and learning, how might we take that radical mission that Franklin had over 250 years ago and bring it to life today? So what we've been doing or up to in libraries has been things like looking at some of the leading technologies, for example, that will drive our economy in the future. So things in advanced manufacturing or 3D printing and 3D design, things related to robotics, and how can we take those ideas that are not well positioned to go between the spines of a book, better to do that through experience, and how can we bring those to life through our network of 80 libraries? And that's really where the focus, my focus has been, Emmanuel's focus has been, on lighting up neighborhoods in that way.
Well, and we're very familiar with the point you just made, as I know that Inventable, Zach Kaplan, has donated some carvies and ex-carvies to the Chicago Public Library for people to use.
Right.
As well as other libraries around Illinois. And ironically, actually, Zach is going to be the keynote at our next TechNoir Showcase on October 24th. So we are totally into the makerspace thing. And it's, to me, one of the things that I find most fascinating and I'm hopeful with regard to the library, why I thought it was such an important topic, is that when you're dealing with technology, it's one of those things, like reading is important, obviously, and you want to get people to read, and you have to start early. Like not only is it a learning curve, it's also like a lifestyle thing. If you don't get them reading early, they usually don't read longer. You know, when they're later in their age, they just don't care. same as with technology.
Mm-hmm.
And schools on their own right don't all have the same assets and means and things to do and provide people. And so the more we use our public libraries, I think, to be a testing zone, as you mentioned, the more opportunities for kids to come and experience technology, experience 3D printing and carving, mixing audio, recording things, reading, hearing, listening, music, you name it.
Yeah.
It becomes that place where kids, it's like a playground for education, for learning. And so I really laud what you're doing with Chicago Public Library, because I do believe that, you know, we're in this weird time where people want to sit there on Snapchat and blah, 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 but they're not taking the time to learn. And,
right.
And many kids in the Chicago area are not, they don't have access to the same things.
Right. And also the importance of building community around that learning and those ideas. I mean, so I bless you. I was just last night, actually Chance the Rapper,
yeah.
Famously did his first mixtape at the Harold Washington Library in our U-Media recording studio. And he's so passionate about the work of basically a public library being a space for creativity and creative expression that he comes back once a month and hosts a citywide open mic night at Harold Washington Library. It was last night. Gave this great sort of, you know, hosted the kids. They actually had Common come and had a surprise visitor. But I think what's exciting about someone like Chance and what he brings to it, but also the kinds of kids that we see in the space, they're coming because they're connecting with peers across the city that have their shared interest in music or photography or manufacturing or some aspect of computer program or coding. And we've created a space that allows them to tinker, to play, to explore, and then to learn and to learn on their own terms and also to follow their own passions. And I think that kind of creative learning environment, if you were to go over to, you know, 1871 or really any sort of tech incubator, the environment that you're trying to create in those spaces supports a broad base of learning, a broad base of interests, and that's what we're trying to create in our libraries. And I think the success that we've seen, you know, first in that first digital lab that we did for teens at the Harold Washington Library, we're now at 12 sites, we'll be at 18 sites by the end of next year. The stuff that we've done in early childhood, I think we'll be close to 20 sites by the next, you know, by the end of next year, that we really are creating these dynamic places for play, for exploration, for building community around sort of these ideas, but also populating the space with all this fun leading tech. One side note, though, I think is important to mention is that while we're doing all this emerging stuff, so 3D printing and manufacturing, those kinds of things, so one in three Chicagoans isn't online at home.
Yeah.
And so the library still plays a critical role through its network of 80 libraries in being that place where people can get online. So we often have literally lines of people waiting just to get online to use a computer, to check email, to apply for jobs, et cetera. And so we're also leaning into the really basics of providing basic access and instruction around how to use computers and technologies, but then also spreading that into the areas of where we might be going in manufacturing or digital manufacturing or and computing. And so it's trying to straddle those both worlds, the very rudimentary and basic all the way to the advanced, and creating a space that allows for all that to happen is really the challenge and I think the opportunity that we're leaning into at the library.
Yeah, so I mean, you kind of touched on this a little bit, and it sort of leads me into this next kind of piece, which the question I had was, how do we draw attention to the libraries and get more people there,
mm-hmm.
To let people know that these opportunities are there other than just traditional marketing? One of the things you mentioned that I thought sort of clicked in my head, at least, was like, well, if one in three is going to use the library for the internet, the ability for them to go into a place like this, which is literally changing around them. When they first were doing this, they'd hear that annoying AOL or
right.
You know, whatever. I don't have any listeners here even remember this, or we're live for the younger
dial
people.
Up.
I don't know if they remember dial-up. But you'd walk into dial-up, and like, I don't think, when I'm thinking back to the library, I don't think I would have even looked around, right? It was just
right.
Tan walls and some
right.
walls of books. Now, with what you've built,
yep.
You have to wait in line to use it.
Right.
So it's like a free tour. It's like Howard Tolman walking around 1871. You have this tour that you can see stuff that you literally never mm-hmm. would have seen before. So I think that will be a natural attraction to get more people to utilize the space. What do you guys have in mind or in store to get more people
to grow the use?
Yeah, yeah, to get more people to not just recognize that they should go to the library, but like
yeah.
to realize the potential.
So we're our strategy actually around growing is really in the specific program areas. It's important to note, though, that one in three Chicagoans has a library card. It's roughly a million card holders. The Harold Washington Library on its own has the same visitor count as the Art Institute. So if you look at all of our libraries combined, all of our libraries, it's more than all the museums in the cities combined. So we have roughly 10 million
yeah.
people walk through our doors. So we're by far the busiest.
So you're not actually struggling to get people in there?
Well,
like
no,
this.
We're not struggling to get people through the doors, but I think where we are struggling and where we think we have a unique opportunity is just what you pointed out, is the how we expose the person who's coming to get online or to pick up a book to manufacturing and 3D printing, or
yeah.
someone who's coming in just because we got a maker lab or recording studio, and connecting them to art and cultural programming, or that new parent who's coming with for the first time with their child to get them signed up for a library card, connecting that parent to programs that might be interesting beyond just for children. And so for us, because we're doing stuff with early childhood, with after school and teens, with cultural and literacy and tech and emerging tech. Part of our challenge is actually to take an existing customer and connect them to a new service that they otherwise wouldn't know about. So making those connections and deepening our relationship with our user base. Certainly by doing that well, we're seeing growth over time. Many of our programs, for example, the stuff that we've been doing with teens, we've seen double and triple digit increases in utilization of those programs over the last few years. Our summer program for kids, for example, once we moved it from just a reading program to a program for STEM education, went from 55,000 kids just a couple summers ago to 105,000 kids this past summer. So we're finding ways to increase, but for our strategy around increasing is actually taking an existing customer and engaging them with a new service
all
that maybe
stuff.
Don't know about. Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, and at that point, you're going to have the share effect where kids are going to be like, oh my God, I got to play with, I got to make a fidget spinner out of the 3D carver.
Yeah.
Like, this
and
is crazy.
Maybe we keep them through the, you know, we get them when they're young and we keep them all the way through. But I think that, you know, right now is a renaissance, I think, in, you know, libraries, and in part because of the world that we're living in today, that our mission is about connecting people to the leading information ideas of the day. Increasingly, it's more complex to do that. You can't just do that through one sort of static, passive, you know, book.
Yep.
And an experience, and creating an experience, and creating an opportunity to play and to explore. There's so many more ways that we can do that through libraries. And the fact that we are literally in every neighborhood in the city, we can be an artery to bring the rich of what the world has to offer to where people are in their neighborhoods. And I think in our city, we know that there's certain, you know, neighborhoods where people are, you know, very mobile and they're moving all around the city, other neighborhoods where people are less likely, but everybody has access to a public library. And if we can leverage those public libraries strategically, they really can be an important tool for our economic strategy as a city, which we rethink a lot about our education strategy as a city, but also how we really strengthen our neighborhoods through leaning into our assets like libraries and neighborhoods.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, you've got my vote on this. I think I can't stress how important I think this early education, particularly as it pertains to STEM and tech, and in particular as it pertains to girls in STEM and tech and getting opportunity to explore on their own. We're chasing after this dream of Amazon HQ2.
Yeah.
And one of the big parts that's on that RFP is access to a workforce that's ready for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that starts now. That starts with these kids. That starts with them going to the library to learn what they can explore and chase their wildest dreams.
Right.
And we've surrounded them with, you know, we get a lot of stuff, you know, negative press with the government stuff that we're dealing with both in the city as well as the state. But you cannot deny that we have some of the best universities in the world that are
right
now here. And you cannot deny that we have some of the best, largest, most largest companies in the country around us. And we have one of the best tech incubators in the world.
And actually the number one ranked library system in the world, if you didn't know that
Boom.
Already.
There you
I should
go.
Tell you that.
I did. We should have started with that.
How
did I miss this? Sam is fired. Whoever wrote this rundown's fired.
I actually have a fun story on young women in tech. We a number of years ago, we started lending out robots that teach kids as young as 8 years old how to do programming. It's called a Finch robot, designed at Carnegie Mellon. And to test it out, I forget which radio station it was, but they got, you know, one of the kids, her name's Gabby, 8 years old. They checked out a robot, took it home, put her on the show. Within, you know, 10, 20 minutes, Gabby was able to figure out how to start programming this robot and scratch. And she had this fun interview. And the announcer said, well, you know, what do you think? Would you use this again? And Gabby's like, yeah, I would do this again, but I actually would design this differently. I would design this to be like my doll or maybe like a truck. And so she was already sort of reimagining like how she would take this robot and create sort of a new thing that she would want to play with. And I think that to me, you know, it underscores the role that we have in a library, that this idea that you can't be what you can't see.
Yep.
And if we can expose people in our city at an early age to all the things that we can possibly be, they're going to land on the stuff that there excites them, and they're going to naturally follow that path. And we've got a lot of great anecdotal examples from Chance the Rapper to, yep, you know, to others. But I think if we do that at scale and continue to do that at scale, we're doing our job as a public library.
Couldn't agree more. I want to get you out of here, but I want to ask one last favor of you. As we look to the future,
yep,
I want to go a little, you talked about experiential a little while ago. Mm-hmm. I want to go visual.
Mm-hmm.
Walk me through, if you were taking me on a tour, what you see the library of the future to look like.
So I think that it would be a combination. There's got to still be a way for people to retrieve static content. So whether that's digital content for, you know, books, music, streaming, et cetera. We're doing a lot of that today. So whatever that looks like 10, 20 years down the road.
The chip in our brain,
gaming,
the Starbucks.
So there's a whole virtual component. We're actually doing stuff with virtual reality right now. So there's a whole sort of digital virtual element that the future library looks like, that you're not even stepping in our walls. You're actually experiencing us in the world around you. Within the physical library, I think that you'll see sort of a combination of the experience you might get in a science or tech museum, with a heavier focus on how that experience is linking you to what we're trying to achieve as a city. And so many of the activities of our libraries today are really about how we can expose people to the information and ideas that are going to make our city stronger and more competitive. So it's sort of science museum meets library, maybe meets in the children's areas, children's museum, but it's much more experiential. It's much more about the creation of content and ideas than just the static consumption of them. And so there's this sort of flip of just a static place to get content to a place where content is being created, where people are exploring. It's much more interactive. But in many ways, I actually think that we are prototyping what that future library will look like 10, 20 years down. If you just go to one of our, you know, digital media labs for teens or early childhood centers, you'll see a much more robust place where people are playing, engaging, and interacting. And I think that that has a place in the public library long into the future.
I love it. This sounds like a library I couldn't get kicked out of for being too loud.
No, actually, we would encourage you.
That was my first.
We encourage you to eat and drink appropriately, not, you know.
Drink Starbucks.
Coffee. Yeah, Starbucks.
Yeah, just have Starbucks.
Have fun and be loud for sure.
No 6-inch voices. I like it.
All right,
I like
a lot.
It. Thank you, Brian. You can catch this episode of More at technori.com. Download the podcast on iTunes and stay connected by following us on Facebook and Twitter at technori, or follow me at Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.